The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. Today's topic is juvenile justice, how it affects the lives and well-being of our youth and our community. And those of you who have listened to Healthy Ulster Radio for a while know that we cover a very broad range of topics, all the things that affect individuals, families, and our community's well-being and sustainability. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Dana Katz. She's Assistant Program Director and Case Manager who works with Family of Woodstock's Adolescent Services Program and the 180 Restorative Justice Program. Welcome, Dana. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So, Dana, tell our listeners what restorative justice is. Very interesting concept.
Sure. So restorative justice is a theory of justice that's influenced by the traditions of Native American and Aboriginal communities. It's really rooted in these values and principles that kind of guide how we handle situations and interactions with people in general. There's a real focus on community, bringing community together. And generally, it's looking at addressing a problem. So bringing the community together to address a problem, looking at who was harmed by this problem or affected by this problem, and then trying to repair any of the harm caused or any of the relationships that were affected. There are several different kinds of restorative justice practices out there, but some of the more common ones are victim-offender mediations and circles. So there's family group conferencing circles or peacemaking circles, and you know, it's used in various different settings, from the prison system to school systems. So it's widely used.
That's amazing that it goes all the way back to our Native heritage here. So how does it connect to youth specifically? I mean, what is the impact on youth? How do youth get involved in becoming part of that? And how does it work?
So, well, restorative justice, I would think the closest connection for youth would be through the schools. And so this is becoming a really popular thing in schools to utilize restorative justice practices as sort of a tool for addressing the school-to-prison pipeline, which is a whole other topic. But it's really being used in schools in that way to try to avoid the more punitive punishment, create alternatives to suspension. So that would be one of the big ways that youth might come in contact with restorative justice. And then specifically, you know, I work in the 180 program, which is a restorative justice diversion program, and we work with youth 7 to 17. So that's another way in which they would, you know, come into contact with restorative justice.
So in the schools, it might be some infraction that could result in being suspended or maybe even something more serious? And then how would that person then be handled? Would it be through the principal's office, or is there some kind of protocol for setting up a committee or a court, a peer court, or how does that work?
So all schools kind of handle things differently. So it's kind of hard to say, but with regard to 180, the way we work, when we get referrals from the school, usually what happens is if a student is facing a long-term suspension, so 30 days or 45 days, and what happens is they have a superintendent's hearing, and generally at that hearing, the youth is offered to do 180 as a reduction in their suspension. So that would be how they come into contact. I don't really know the ins and outs of the protocols of all the schools, when it comes to restorative justice, but I know there is definitely a big shift that's occurring right now in the school systems towards restorative justice.
And when it comes to the law enforcement system or the criminal justice system, so how, before there was restorative justice, what would be the typical way that a youth might be handled in that system?
Sure. And I would say it's even typical of today. So traditionally what happens is when a crime is committed, the justice system is primarily concerned with, you know, who did it, what law was broken, and then, you know, what should be done to either punish or treat the offender. And the intention of this approach is really to get some sort of retribution or punishment for the offense, and isn't really looking at rehabilitation. So that's sort of the traditional justice system handling crime.
And the restorative justice system is designed to do what as a alternative to that?
So restorative justice programs are really primarily looking at who was affected by what happened and how, in what ways, what needs to be done to repair any of the harm that was caused or repair any of the relationships that were affected, what needs to be done to heal from what's happened, to be able to move forward and kind of have some closure, and then what preventative measures can be taken to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm. And who gets to decide in what circumstances or in what cases that happens, and where it goes from there?
So that's kind of hard to say. It might be helpful if I give you sort of an overview of 180 and how that works, because it might be, it's kind of hard to say how other programs would run them. Mm-hmm. But so 180, we, like I said, we work with youth 7 to 17. We get our referrals from the probation department, and they'll refer to us in lieu of a petition to family court. And then police departments can refer directly to us in lieu of an arrest, or if, you know, instead of an arrest, in lieu of an appearance ticket.
Oh, really?
Probation.
So even before the arrest process.
Right.
Right.
And then the schools can refer as an alternative or reduction in suspension. So when youth come into our program, the intention is to address whatever crime or behavior took place that led to the referral. We do that by utilizing the restorative justice practice that we use is a community conferencing circle that we call the Juvenile Community Accountability Board. And it's made up of volunteers in the community who've all been trained to facilitate these circles. And so at the circle, we have the youth who was referred and their parent or guardian. There are three members of the accountability board there. A case manager is there, and then we invite the victim as well. The victim does not always come, but that's their choice. Everything's voluntary. And then at the circle, we are reviewing what happened. And like I said before, we're looking at who's been harmed, who's been affected, what needs to be done. And so throughout this process, we're coming up as a group with some ideas for what can be done to repair that harm. And then we come up with an agreement that everyone signs. And then the youth, they have a direct voice in determining the outcome. So if there's something they don't want to do, we want to honor that and give them, you know, the room to say no to something. They don't want to do it just because they're less likely to get something out of it.
Yeah, and to really follow through with
right.
it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is how we do it in 180. So we come together in a circle. We work on creating the agreement of activities, again, for prevention and repairing relationships.
Mm-hmm. And is there some kind of accountability system built into that?
I mean, I think that the way we always use the same restorative questions, and they're structured in a way that are, they're all open-ended. So it's, the intention is to invite deeper conversation, and it's really, they're structured in a way that really promote self-reflection. And so just by being present in this conversation, by answering these questions, there's accountability just in that conversation.
So it becomes almost like a learning, growing, healing process that's built into it.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Is it appropriate in every case, regardless of the circumstances? Like, say, for instance, you know, somebody might think, well, what if it's a violent crime or there's been some more serious damage done? Is there a space for every youth that might have gotten into trouble or made a mistake?
So I have a couple of things to say about that. Restorative justice in general is not for everyone. It's voluntary. And so that means the person has to be willing to participate in the program. So if they're not there, then it's off the bat, it's not appropriate for them. Specifically with 180, some of the more violent cases might not be appropriate. We do have to, so we are a collaboration with the Ulster County Probation Department. So any of the cases that are of little concern, is this too serious, we usually will, check with a family court and see how they're feeling about it. So some of the cases, some of the more violent cases might not get sent to 180, but I still think that restorative justice could be useful in collaboration with whatever might be happening at court.
And do you get good buy-in from parents or caregivers?
Yeah, generally, yeah. I think that most of the time, and sometimes parents are really concerned about their kids. It's the first time they've ever done something. And so I think usually this is something that's a little bit settling for them, a little less scary than court.
Well, we want to find out a lot more about this. It's really interesting and fascinating, actually. But we're going to take a short break first. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
The heart is a complex organ, but finding specialized cardiovascular care in Poughkeepsie and Kingston is so easy. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital are now home to WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute, the Hudson Valley's largest multi-specialty cardiovascular practice. They have state-of-the-art diagnostics and innovative imaging and testing technologies. You'll receive comprehensive cardiac and vascular care from some of the world's top cardiologists and vascular surgeons. You'll also have a seamless connection to advanced care at WMC Health's flagship hospital, Westchester Medical Center. The best cardiovascular care comes from the best people, and now the very best are right in your backyard. Visit wmchealth.org/heart to discover more about WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network. WMC Health, advancing care here.
This is a great time to be outdoors. Enjoy it and limit your exposure to Lyme and other serious tick-borne diseases by following these steps. While out walking, stay on clear, well-traveled paths. Cover up and use tick repellent as directed. Keep the brush and grass around your home clear and trimmed. Shower as soon as possible after spending time outdoors. Check everyone, including pets, for ticks frequently and at the end of each day. And remove all ticks properly and promptly. Remember, you have the power to help prevent Lyme and other serious tick-borne diseases. A message from the Ulster County Department of Health. For more information, visit ulstercountyny.gov/health. That's ulstercountyny.gov/health. Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and today we're talking about the juvenile justice system, how it affects our youth, our community, and our guest is Dana Katz from Family of Woodstock. And Dana, before we, the break, we were talking about the restorative justice program, and I was just curious, in the notes that we used to prepare for the show, you talked about things like helping youth build their academic skills and their vocational skills and their life skills, really going beyond the immediate response to a particular mistake they might have made or a crime they may have committed. Why is it important to work with the whole person and really look at the total context of a youth's life?
Well, really, we're coming from a prevention standpoint. You know, if we want to help the youth, you know, in future situations that they might be faced with, which generally that's what's happening, we're probably going to make mistakes again or have similar situations. It's important to know what to do. And so a lot of the life skills we end up focusing on are coping skills, mindfulness practices, anger management strategies, or how to handle frustrating people and situations. Mm-hmm. And so if we really want to prevent, you know, another fight or whatever it is, it's really important to focus on utilizing those tools and being able to call on them when and if it happens again.
Yeah, it would seem that, you know, that today's youth in particular, you know, with all the pervasive violence in our culture, not to mention all of the strains and stresses of perhaps living in poverty or in communities where, you know, where there's a lot of violence happening on the streets, where that, you know, that the modeling is, could be gangs, it could be whatever it is, that kids might learn in those circumstances that the way to handle a disagreement or stress or you know, an alleged grievance might be to resort to violence or doing something, you know, to hurt another person. So it's really unraveling that at, on one hand, and then teaching them that there's a bigger world out there, that there are other ways to handle these things.
Yeah, I mean, and it's almost like a natural, it's like our natural response. It's like the path of least resistance to yell or hit. And it's a learned behavior. And so if you don't learn any other way to handle something, you'll never do it any other way. So it really, you know, if you don't have the opportunity to learn something else, you're going to do what you know how to do.
Mm-hmm. And so how closely do you work with youth in terms of, do you have like particular case managers, or I know you handle some cases. Does that mean that you actually help follow through with that, with those individuals? Because I know like in a lot of the preventative programs or a lot of the treatment programs that we see out there, where things seem to fall between the cracks is when, you know, a person goes through a short-term program, they come out, and then there's nothing after that. So what do you actually do to in that continuum of care to follow that youth to make sure that they don't regress?
Sure. So we, you know, we are a short-term program. We're about 3 or 4 months, mm-hmm. But we are case managers also. So that means that we are looking at any presenting issues that might be there. We want to help. So we will do what we can during the period that we are working with the families. But we oftentimes are making referrals to other services and other resources. So we do that pretty regularly in terms of ongoing care.
Mm-hmm. And in the 180 program, or even maybe specifically in reference to criminal activity, for instance, so what kind of results are you seeing? What do you see? Do you have any particular success stories that you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have so many. I'm going to start with numbers, though, just because okay. They're so good. So we've been running since 2013. We have had about 200 youth successfully complete the program. And of the 200, only 12 have reoffended, which is like kind of a
wow.
Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, I have so many really like powerful stories. Okay, let me start with this one. It was an instance, something was happening at the school. A youth went there in the middle of the night, and they were just, the window was open, they were looking around, and they set off a silent alarm. A SWAT team came. It was very intense. So we discussed this at the circle, and one of the questions that the volunteers asked the young boy was, you know, what do you think the police were thinking in this moment? Like, what do you think they thought, or who do you think they thought was in the school? And he didn't really have much to say. He was kind of quiet. And then I met with him after, and he was like, wow, I didn't even think about that. And I want to write a thank you letter to the policeman for being so brave. And I helped him write this letter. And he said, you know, thank you for not shooting me. So it was just something that it didn't occur to him. He hadn't really thought about. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, just, and then we went, he hand delivered the letter. And I think, you know, just, I could see how it really shifted him. So that's one story. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, in the process of growing up with our kids, right, we want them to make mistakes that they can learn and grow from. But we don't want them to make the kinds of mistakes that are of lasting damage, right, that are either going to damage themselves or others in the immediate time, but also, you know, have repercussions throughout their lives. So it just seems that this is really a great approach.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm gonna add that specifically with the probation referrals, if they complete the program successfully, then the case is expunged. So it's like it never happened.
Right. So it changes their whole life trajectory. Really, mm-hmm. That's really great. And a little bit more about the Community Accountability Board. You talked a little bit about who's on it, but how do you go about recruiting people? Are they're all volunteers, right?
And yeah, all volunteers.
How does it work?
I've tried to do a good amount of outreach. I've created some flyers. We have them on a couple of websites. I do a lot of presentations, and I usually try to ask at the end. We do need more diversity on our board, so I'm always kind of looking for some more, just different age range and mm-hmm. colors and all that. So I kind of throw it out there every time I have an opportunity to talk about the program, really.
Mm-hmm. And what feedback do you get from board members? I mean, you talked about how it impacts youth, but what do you get from them? What kind of feedback?
Yeah, all of the board members really love it because you can see a real difference from, we have an opening circle where we talk about what happened, and then we have a closing circle, which is really more of a ceremony where we're kind of just want them to feel good about what they've accomplished, and, you know, we're giving them a certificate. And so the difference that they can see is very real from the opening to the closing. You can see, you know, their self-esteem has improved. You can see they're actually smiling. They feel good about what they've done. And I think that the board members, like, you know, they
sharing
really,
that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The opportunity to actually turn someone's life around. I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's really terrific. And so for our listeners out there that might want more information on restorative justice or the specific programs or might want to get involved by volunteering, how do they go about finding you and getting more information?
So I have an email and a phone number.
Should sure.
I go
yeah,
ahead?
Go for it.
So my email is dkatz, K-A-T-Z, at FOW, as in Family of Woodstock, INC.org. And my number is 845-514-0239.
And why don't you say that over again?
Sure. 845-514-0239.
And your email address again?
It's dkatz at FOWINC.org.
Well, folks, you know, once again, we are so fortunate to live in Ulster County because we have so many great organizations and dedicated people like Dana and her colleagues who are doing fantastic work out there. And Healthy Ulster Radio is an opportunity to showcase that great work and also to help people understand that we all have an important role to play in the health and well-being of our community. And unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you, Dana, so much.
Thank
it's really
you
been a pleasure
me.
Having you here. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and your community healthy and strong with Healthy Ulster Radio. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.